So what I'd like to do is discuss, thank Claire for the invitation, and I plan to discuss just what we've done with Rice, mainly focused at the center here, some of which I've been involved in, and some is working with both Jeremy Edwards and Angela Baldo. So outline of my talk then is to I'm going to review the population structure of Rice for you, those of you who aren't Rice people, then talk about the sequencing data we've gotten using a high SNP data via a high-density Rice array and resequencing, a database that Angela and Jeremy developed, and then go into an example of how we've used it in GWAS analysis, and then sort of go back, how can we use this as rice breeders, which I read as the theme of the symposium, a little bit about the wild collections, and then some SNP data coming down the pike. So for those of you not familiar with rice, this is an old famous picture. Actually, the sequencing of this, or the SSR marker work with this, was done at Stuttgart. And I practiced this, and I was hoping the touchpad would work. But anyway, you can see here that rice is known for Machin times to have both the indica type subspecies and the japonica. The indica types are represented by the indica and Ausch subpopulation, and the japonica by the tropical and temperate japonica. And we see the same thing using similar SSR markers. I actually had this working before I practiced this. And you can see here that you have the, this particular set, we had the subpopulation group of US rice cultivars, and then we have the which are mostly tropical japonica, the temperate, and what I think is interesting, why I included this is some old work that the African rice is even more distant, and then the rufopogons, you notice, which are the ancestral species, do not cluster with, always cluster with rice itself, but cluster separately, and the indicas. So what part of what we did, and this is in collaboration with the McCooch lab, using that first set that I presented, we phenotyped a group of about 422 accessions in the field, 79 countries, so it's very diverse. And we've used this set to do several sets of SNP markers. The first set was using a Golden Gate assay of, it was 1,536, 1,300 of which were useful. We also looked at it with SSR. We see the same population structure. And then at the time, we used a 44,000 affymetric SNP array. And most recently, then, it's been genotyped with a high-density rice array of 700,000 SNPs. So why do that? What we found when we did the smaller set, that we needed more SNP markers because of the strong subpopulation structure in rice, and we needed more lines. So this was an attempt to get more markers. Resequencing of 125 lines, and you see the same, there it is, finally. Group, you see the Barthii, the African rice is quite a bit separate. Here's the japonica set, and all the black are the ancestral rufopogon species, and then the indica here. And this you see throughout the rice. It was a pool of 700,000 SNPs, of which not all of them work in each group. So it ranges from about 120, 80-some thousand SNPs to 380-some thousand that you use within the subgroup that's available for association mapping. So to increase the number of accessions, Erie then expanded this to a set which we call the Rice Diversity Panel 2, and also included both the ancestral species of rufopogon and the Glabrema barthii. So it's a much more diverse set. We have brought that through at Stuttgart through the efforts of about six different groups, bringing it through the quarantine process, and we're growing it out in the field probably next summer at Stuttgart, and the seed will probably be available in early 2017. It was a significant effort to bring 1,300 some lines through quarantine. So with the two panels, you have about 1,700 thousand lines available with the high-density rice array data. So, at the same time, there was a, with Beijing Genomics Institute in Erie worked with them. They also sequenced about 3,000 rice successions and got 2.6 million SNPs. And so we decided, rather than bring this through, since if you look up here, these show the subgroups of indica. Remember, that's the one subpopulation. It's very heavy. These are often difficult to grow in the U.S. You have the Aushboro group, but a lot fewer Japonica types of accessions. So what we did, Angela went through, and we found there was actually overlap with our collections for about 500 to 600 of these lines based on the accession numbers and name matching. So instead, what we did, they built a database that puts all the rice diversity panel lines together plus those of the 3,000. So it merging all the SNP data by matching the SNPs both in the 6K and the Hydra data set, you have a probably the largest group of accessions genotype, 4,500 some lines, and then built a database, which they named RiceBase, and you can see that it has the genome tracks for the Nippon berry, which is the sequence Gena 9311, and then also brought in some of the wild from Arufa Poga, and this doesn't show a Nevera, the other parent is also in there, and that's from the Horizon Map Alignment Project. So what you can do with this, you can search it, and eventually it will be publicly available. Right now it's just at our center. Based on Nippon Berry, they went through and matched all the SSR data we had to SNP positions, and then the genome annotation on the MSU7 database. Drilling down in there, as an example, they used, this is chromosome 6, and it's where the starch synthesis genes are. And so if you can read it, it says starch synthesis right here. And these are known SSR markers. And if you go, so it's for amylose and gelatinization temperature. They're right together at the top of chromosome 6. And you can actually go down and see how the SNP changes affect the lower part of this. Here's your genes expressed, and then changes in these NIP markers give changes in the starch content of rice. So it's whether it's sticky or not sticky in the amylose content. So we use this then in an association study. We screen the whole rice diversity panel, one for cold tolerance at the germination stage, and this is an issue. We'd like to plant earlier in Arkansas in the south, earlier in the season, get a jump on the water because later in the season there's less water. It's also important if you think in California, you have cold water coming out of the reservoirs. And so I went through and screened this panel using a ragdoll method, conducted a GWAS, and drilled down to the candidate genes. So quick show, you can see sterilize the seed, put it out on germination paper, let it germinate. We had three controls in each one. And then to check the germination in each seed lot, we grew it under warm conditions as well as cold, looked at the how fast the seeds grew, so and measured these using root reader. So instead of roots, we measured coleoptiles, and you can see there's differences in the germination rates. And Asan Shakiba, who is now newly hired as the hybrid rice breeder at Arkansas, worked with this and evaluated it within the indica group right here. There was only 15 lines in the diversity panel that showed cold tolerance, but in the Japonica we saw differences, and surprisingly the temperate Japonica had, in this particular set, had less tolerance. Fewer tolerant lines than tropical Japonica, which is what is grown in the U.S. So we saw differences. Did the GWAS, QQ plots are important to see if you're going to get good SNPs. Looking at these tails, see how they go from the normal. And so we kept the indicas together. They didn't make much sense apart. We've looked at it both ways. The temperate, we we split this into temperate and tropical. This one's a little off, but we could not find a better plot for this. Looked at Manhattan plots and what we had to do here. We've gone back and forth, but decided to raise the p-value so we just get the very significant groups of SNPs. And I tried to stick those in here. And we see differences in expressions depending on which subgroup we're looking at. And I've summarized it here by just picking those with the highest p-values or highest LOD scores. And it's color-coded depending on the group. So like all accessions is the brown, and this one was in the all accession and indica subpop group. The one I'm going to focus on was just in temperate japonica. And so this was a real hot spot on chromosome 7 and also on 9. And going back into biparental populations, these were also where QPTLs had been found. So, like I said, show how we used this, Asan used this in a rice paste. We took that QTL region on the crop top of 4, went into rice paste. This is the region of the QTL here. I drilled down and looked at the linkage disequilibrium here. And this haplotype base at the bottom then was built from that big 4,500 accessions so we could do haplotype mapping. Drilled down in there and looked at the haplotypes, and what we found, if you look here, it looks like it's from tropical japonica, and he identified that one, to illustrate this one haplotype block with the putative transposon protein and ethylene. And he spent a lot of time going through this, and to summarize the genes then across all of them would be this list of candidate genes. So I think this is interesting. We decided not to bring in all the 3K after we've brought in all the rice diversity panel too, but we're able to use the genotypic data in a database that was built by people that have bioinformatics background, which is not me, which is contributed to Angela and Jeremy's efforts. So then to summarize then, we have the candidate genes related to cold tolerance identified and validated by QTLs from biparental populations. And so I think it shows that we can actually use the GWAS mapping with a quantitative trait like cold tolerance. It's a lot messier data to work with. We're also doing one with vitamin A or vitamin C, which is ascorbic acid and a response to cold stress, with another group at Arkansas State University. So I think this relates to our traits of agronomic importance. Move on then. I'm going to switch a little bit here and look. This is a slide borrowed from Anna, based, and it sort of shows the breeding background of U.S. rice. So these are the really old ones from the early 1900s. The purple is the time period from the 1930s to 60. This would be 60 to 80. And you can see there's been, and this is the 80 to 2000 based on a paper in Crop Science by Liu et al. And you can see that there isn't a lot of outcrossing. There is some there are some genes that have been brought in, but basically as with many crops, it's a very narrow gene base for the southern U.S. rice varieties. And that was shown, if you think back to that second slide I had. But we were with haplotype mapping. If you look at the top here, these are U.S. rice cultivars, and this particular one is the semi-dwarf dream brought in from indica. Most of the U.S. rice is tropical japonica, and that's what this is showing here. And this is brought in from indica. So the red is the indica introgress into japonica, and the other big gene is for a last resistance gene, and some of this is due to the efforts of Karen Moldenhauer early in the late 80s, early 90s, and the team there at Arkansas. And you can see it actually shows the introgression of the indica in. There's also in the same paper that when this was published using the first set of SNP data, the 1.5K, that where the indica has poor grain quality, and you can see on chromosome 6 where the japonica has been brought in. So my thought is how to expand this using the wild. And since part of the effort here was to utilize wild, I thought I'd bring up, we have also, as part of the grant funding that we had with Susan McCooch, we genotyped a collection, first with 48 SSR markers, and these are the progenitor species. So this would be the, this is sort of the Navarra group, and the bigger circle here is the Rufopogon, which some of which the Rufopogons are much more wild looking. And we brought this in. They've been genotypes. Basically, it looks like there's about four different clades, and these and you can see the same clustering that we saw before using the 1500 SNPs. Here's your indica group. If you look at the tree, and the colored ones are sativa lines that serve as a base marker. But then there's these independent groups, just like we were seeing with SSR markers. And there's the Japonica type. There are very few Japonica ancestral species in the U.S. The bigger group, we had a group, a person come through from China, and they had found the same thing in the Erie collection, which most of these came from. They found very few that were of the Japonica type, but this person was Chinese, and then within China there are some, and the few that are in this group were collected in China. So these we've actually phenotyped in four different environments. The paper is not published yet, and we've also at Stuttgart we've looked at the two fungal diseases of rice and blast, and we'll perform the we don't have the GWAS mapping done. The hard thing is it's a smaller group than we have subpopulations, so it's basically just going to be looking at the all accession part of it. The other exciting thing I promised that I've been involved with, and this is using two parents, Jefferson is a U.S. rice line, and 105491 is a Rufopogon that's been crossed with several different sativas around the world, cultivars, and the same yield genes show up. And so this next slide is an advertisement for poster 1037. And what you see here, we had the two parents. This is Jefferson. You can see the Rufopogon is a tall, ugly thing. And by just introgressing certain segments, and this was across several different cult backgrounds, we saw the same yield advantage. What we've done recently at Stuttgart, working with Anna, we were able to identify which yield components actually gave rise to this improved yield. And it was interesting. We were real surprised when we analyzed some of it's the flag leaf length. So see the poster for more. And lastly, I was going to mention the rice mini core collection. We've had some talk here of the core collections, mini cores. And recently, we also have a core collection in rice of 1800 accessions. We have the mini core, which has been first been genotyped with a lot more SSR markers and recently been using resequencing data, resequencing using 74,000 filtered SNPs, and we see the same group. We see the glabrimas up here. Here's your indica group. Here's your tropical japonica. And this was done by Kathy Kandanas, working in Mike Grusek's lab and a group at Cornell. Soon this will be available after they publish the association mapping they've done with their traits of interest. But several people have used this core collection. I wanted to put this out. You might, in the future, people would want to go back and look at the core collection, their mini core, and see if they have a better results or different can utilize the GWAS mapping. So what I did here is summarize. This is what's available and what's been sequenced in rice. We've talked a lot. I've focused on the RDP1, mainly Rice Diversity Panel 1, because that's what I've worked with. It's 422 that have been basically phenotyped. There's some more we put in because I have genotypes but not phenotypes, so I sort of fluctuated around. Many of these are tropical japonicas because they grow better in the U.S. We did three different types of SNP genotyping. The wild I mentioned, same, and then the high density, also the rice diversity panel two which we've brought in from Erie, 252 of those are Japonica. It's being done now is the GBS genotyping of this particular collection has a lot of U.S. material in it and historical lines, and recently published, putting work at CIAT, done with the rice cap sequencing, three different sets together, and this has quite a few tropical japonicas in with resequencing data. I mentioned the 3K and what's been done. Most of these are available through the Genetic Stock Center other than the 3K at Stuttgart. So, summary then, this confirms the SNP genotyping confirms the strong population structure in rice no matter what you use. You see it, and it's probably one of the most strong structures. We actually have, I did some other work with it with just the phenotypes, and you can see it. It comes from, a lot of it's based on people selecting for the given grain types, the stickiness, the starch quality, because they want certain types of rice in the food they eat. Amount of stickiness or lack of stickiness. Data sets, I think it's exciting to see what can be done just by merging publicly available marker sets and to utilize that in a haplotype analysis. I think the cold tolerance was to illustrate just what can be done with GWAS mapping. And introgressions, I think it's exciting that we actually can figure out what Ruth Pogan was putting in to give the yield improvement. And that we can then track our introgressions and several sets available. And research isn't done without funding. A lot of this was under an NSF grant, two different ones, USDA, and I'm gonna acknowledge my supervisor or research leader, Anna McClung, for helping me. I was like, what do I wanna run, talk about something a little different, not the same old, and bring it together. So she helped me with some ideas. And the team that was much that works in my lab, many of whom are supported by the NSF grant. And lastly, as payback, I'm gonna switch gears. I'm supposed to do a paid advertisement for a postdoc, USDA postdoc position that Jeremy has for him allowing me to, or helping with the rice base. It should be in early January. He just heard he has funding, and that'll be to doing sort of genomic selection kinds of things in rice. So, and that's it. So, questions?